Hey everybody, welcome to the DeFalco Files. Matt Michaels here with Joe DeFalco, the owner and creator of the future stars of wrestling here in Las Vegas.
Wow.
We are in the AI generation. Yeah, we got it. We got a little thing going on now. You know, starting to get progress after, what, 5 years deciding to...
I want to hear the Hair Nation version. Okay,
all right. We'll work on getting a Motley Crue ripoff song for you.
Yeah, Poison, something like that.
Something like that. All right. Hey, I'm just trying to be as cold as ice, like a certain wrestler that you got going, who's a WWE ID wrestler. So you know,
we're stepping up in the world, you know.
Right. So it's a new year. Happy New Year to everyone out there. How was the countdown for you to New Year's?
Yeah, the countdown to midnight fell a little short. We were actually out of there by 11:45, and I was thinking to myself, you know. It isn't like everybody, once the show ends, most of the people leave anyway. They don't care if it's 11:49 or 11:57, you know?
Right.
Like a couple years ago, we had an Iron Man match that started at 11 and we went right till midnight. So that was cool and everything. But, you know, as we grow older, you know, New Year's, Christmas, even that, it's, you know, it's just another day, you know?
Right.
Where it's like, oh, how was your Christmas? Oh, it was great. I was watching football. You know, it was like I ate food that I normally don't get to eat, even though I love stuffed shells. But for some reason, we only make stuffed shells on Christmas. You know?
Right.
So yeah, you know, the show was good. It was solid. You know, we had some younger talent mixed in with some good things that happened. Matt got sick, Vandegrift, and we had Jay Vidal in the back pocket, so I didn't make that announcement. And then Bodie needed a tag partner, so Jay came out. So that was a great surprise because, you know, Jay's a huge fan favorite. He, before he got that TNA contract, he was exclusive pretty much to being an FSW guy. So there's a lot of love for Jay Vidal, who's been very back and forth from Florida and Vegas over the last few years. So, you know, we came to kind of an agreement, you know, to where looks like we're going to have him more full time and he'll be on the January 25th show. So, you know, mixed in with the talent that we use, you know, it's usually more a homegrown show just because it's a difficult drive to come into Vegas on New Year's Eve, to leave on New Year's Eve night, you know what I mean? Right at midnight.
Right.
So, you know, Koa made the drive all by himself because he wanted to be on the show, you know?
Wow.
So I'm like, hey, you got anybody coming with you? Because, you know, I was looking at possibly doing a pre-show match or whatever that we didn't. But we, you know, it's a smaller scale show. It's usually geared toward family and friends. And we had a nice little turnout, you know? So that's the one thing that's always a little worrying. Like last year we knew the Mariachis, it was their debut. They came out big and sold 45 front row tickets. So it was like, okay, worst comes to worst, we're going to have 75 people there. You know, you expect anywhere from 50 to 100 and, you know, 50 is a little disappointing, but you know what you're getting by trying to do something on Christmas. You know, the certain regulars that want to come and they like spending it with us. And, you know, we had Colin Muldoon got his second match. He sold some tickets at the first show, sold some tickets at the second show. You know, he got a little more humbling experience wrestling Bret the Threat. And he did really well against Watson. A few hiccups in there, you know, but you still see the potential. Just because that match may not have been his best match, or it's not going to be something he's going to put in the best of archives, but it was a good opportunity to wrestle somebody. And even after it, I told him certain things, and it was like, You know, you have to, especially at this stage, accentuate the strengths that you have. You come out of a amateur wrestling background and you're trying to do dives and doing all this stuff. It's like the crux of the match and me giving you Bret the Threat to wrestle is because I want to see the wrestling, because that's what you can hang with him at. And to go out of the box is great. Match 10, match 20, but it's match 2. You know, show everybody why, or show me why you're deserving to be on A Cold Day in Hell or at a casino show. And you have to pull out the stops of doing the best you can. And again, you always want to break out and you don't want to just do only amateur wrestling moves. I understand that. But it was kind of like weird to me. It was like, wow, the beginning was not you trying to out-wrestle Bret the Threat. It was you trying to do these cool spots. And, you know, again, you're going to get over because of your ability to do things. You know, when Hook came out, he wasn't trying to be a high flyer. He was trying to be what he was based through with Taz and working and being that guy who can put you in a maneuver. And I think younger guys, and that's what happens. Hey, okay, well, Bret the Threat does that, and he might do this better than me. So I'm going to try to do some cool stuff to offset. And right. I think hurt the beginning stages of the match. I think if he goes out there and he's going, you know, toe-to-toe and move for move, the crowd's going to get behind him more. But, right. You know, and again, those are the learning pains, and that's what happens when it's your second match. So well,
and that brings up a great point, too. Does that not also give Bret, you know, a chance to work the heel mode a little bit more? Because what you can do with that style, that contrast style that they have, you know, where they're both, you know, legit shoot type fighters, the grapplers, you can easily get more of that heat by rubbing it in that you're a better wrestler than he is. I mean, just psychologically, you know?
Well, right. And but the thing is, it's like, you know, what Colin is doing, Bret has already done, you know? And in Colin, we see it in the training and we see it after the show. And, you know, you see the cockiness. You see that level of arrogance to where he's come in as a student and he's bypassed guys that have had 3 months ahead of him or 5 months ahead of him. And he's gotten a match where some guys are struggling to get that match. And, you know, he goes in there, you know, with the bravado and it's like, calm down, kid. It wasn't that fucking great. Okay. It's like, but that's what he needs to understand. Because if he walks around like that, oh, that was great. No, it wasn't. You need to work on shit. You know, Kenny hasn't been around as much because of his other job and things like that. But that's what's important. It isn't when we do tape study. It isn't to be like, hey, let's show you everything you did great. It's like, no, this is what you need to work on. This is what you fucked up. And this is how you're going to become better to do it. And, you know, that's why the tape study is a very important process with the younger guys.
Right.
You know, yeah, I don't need a tape study match when we're doing, you know, Hammerstone versus Danny Limelight. Yeah, I guess we can for the younger guys and be like, hey, see where this was kind of a fuck up? Well, if you guys were in the match, it could have been a total disaster. But look how these veterans worked their way back into the match without the majority of the fans noticing that it was kind of a cluster, you know, because there's stuff, the more you know, the more you are aware, and the more you're aware, the more you see things that probably shouldn't have been that way, you know. Right. And I see it in a lot of matches, like, hey, was that supposed to go that way? It looked a little, you know, clunky. Yeah, right. You know, what happened was, but they're more experienced and able to do it. And that's what the practice matches are for. And that's why a lot of these guys are all, you know, get butt hurt because they got 8 months in and they don't have a match. And it's like, you know, you're not ready. You know, if you're ready to get killed by Big Duke Lawrence, then yeah, maybe, you know, when, you know, I'm watching somebody try to do a superplex on a guy as big as them who's never really done it before because the agent pitches it, and all of a sudden it looks like he's gonna fucking drop the guy on his head. It's like, fuck, what the fuck are you doing? Like, if you don't feel comfortable doing something, don't do it because somebody said, hey, this might be a good idea. Yeah, the idea might be good, but if you're not, you know, skilled to do it, you don't do it because there's nothing worse than hurting yourself. And there is, it's hurting somebody else.
Yeah.
Because if you fuck up and do a move and you fucked it up and you hurt yourself, that's on you. But if you do something and it fucks somebody else up, you got to live with that. And in a lot of cases, you know, it stays with you for a very long time.
Right. Yeah. Anything else on that show stick out to you?
You know, again, when I'm not announcing and doing the stuff, I'm not sitting there and laser focused on stuff. It's running around, making sure the feed's going on good, running to the door, going around. You talk to people when you do see some stuff. So you don't really get to gauge everything. You know, it's like I'm outside and it's like, wow, that was a really impressive pop for the mariachis, being that their crew and their people weren't there. So it was generic fans who don't have a personal connection to the mariachis other than watching them wrestle. And I got to be honest, a lot of them that are there, it's probably their first time. Like if Colin sells 10 tickets, it's because it's the 10 people that probably didn't like wrestling and they came to see their boy, you know, and Excellence selling a couple tickets and this guy selling a couple tickets. So it's pretty impressive when you see a young tag team, but they looked apart. Hey, it's Mariachi Montana. They got this upbeat, happy music. They come out, they got the gear. They looked apart.
Right.
So people want to get behind them, I guess. You know, Gypsy Mac, you know, after getting beat down and Raw Reese taking her out and throwing him out of the Rumble, people are getting behind her. And with injuries to Brittany Brooks and Maserati, who are, you know, I can say it because Triple H said it on Netflix, you know, we have three babyface women's wrestlers at this point. And Gypsy Mac was kind of a tweener before. You know, she was where we needed her to be to get her a match. Sometimes it was against a heel, sometimes against the face. But now she's full-fledged. You know, we teamed her with Zamaya, and Zamaya's come across as a heel, but it was against Alice Blair beforehand. So doing the mixed tag, and Gypsy Mac got the big win, and I didn't see the pin. I heard, because I knew when the pin happened, because the response was very, very positive on that end. So I think I've and Gypsy, because we're the only ones who could take credit for it, have done a good job at putting her in a position to now pinning the women's champion. As much as Maserati's, you know, right there when she's ready, Brittany Brooks is right there when she's ready, Gypsy has carried the babyface women's division over the last few months, and nobody's going to come in and jump her. So obviously Alice Blair and Gypsy Mac is what is going to happen for the women's championship down the line. Now Brittany is going to be making an appearance on the 25th. She hasn't had a match yet. Her first match actually is the 26th, so she's not wrestling on our show yet. So, you know, she's been in there. She lives in Vegas now. So we feel we can help, you know, tweak her. You know, she was real good about, in the past, if we had a show on Saturday and she didn't have a lot going on, that she would show up Thursday and come in and train, because she knew her training in Vegas was better than her training in Arizona.
Sure.
Facts are facts. You know, you turn your head and there's 7-8 people that are wrestling all over the country. And half of them are wrestling for major companies. So going in with them, they're going to be able to tell you. It's a lot harder when you're the best person in the class.
Yeah. Yes.
You know.
Yes.
You know. You know, it's great when you're the best person in the class and you're cross and he's getting signed. But when you're the best person in the class and you're one of the better indie people, well, there's a lot of room to get better. Right. So now she's in there with people who are far more experienced with her. And again, when she came 6-8 months ago, she walks in and there's Gregory Sharp. There's Chris Bay. There's Shogun. There's Matt Vandegrift doing New Japan. There's Jay Vidal who's in TNA. And they're all in there. If they see something, it's like, hey, maybe try this. Hey, the footwork. It's all the little things. It's like, I can watch a lot and I can tell you a lot of what you're doing right or wrong. But there's far more that I have no idea positioning. Like, I know what it is, but I can't tell you the right way to do it. And that's why you need Sin Bodhi and Kenny King and Remy and Cody and Bateman. Those are just the trainers, but look at the trainees that still come in, you know, that, you know, you can come there any afternoon and there's Matt and there's Damian Drake. And when, hey, Jay Vidal was in town, he's here early and he's in there. Yeah. So, you know, we appreciate that. And that's part of the reasoning of the success of the school is because even if there's not a trainer there, like yesterday, Sin had an issue with some flooding at his house. So he actually drove to Vegas because he lives in a Pahrump. And then he messaged me that he had to go back to deal with it. And Monday, Bateman couldn't make it. So it's like, okay, it's going to be more of an open gym. But Gregory Sharp shows up. And he takes control of the class. You know, yesterday you got Bodhi there. And it's funny, the 17-year-old is going to be telling you what to do. But he's a 17-year-old that he, to me, is the best option to wrestle Jack Cartwheel on the show on Friday.
Right.
So, you know, here's a kid that is getting a lot of love from, you know, people inside the bigger companies.
And there you go, Bodhi and Jack Cartwheel. Friday, January 10th at 7 p.m. at the arena. It's a cold day in hell.
Yes, and it will be. It'll be a cold day in the arena, too. You know, so we got two ID wrestlers on the show. You got Ice Williams. He's going to be wrestling Nino Black. Danny Limelight will not be on hand. But I did find out some interesting information that Ice Williams and Danny Limelight will be in the same building the next day at Reality of Wrestling with Booker T.
Yeah, right.
So that'll be interesting. And then I can also announce that at New Year's Resolution, we do have another exclusive WWE ID match.
Okay.
Happening. Marcus Mathers and Sam Holloway, two ID wrestlers not affiliated with us. So it's obvious, you know, so far there haven't been that many ID matches. And, you know, wrestling in Gabe's old stomping grounds, you know, Evolve, they've had the matches.
Yeah.
But we're continually on that radar. As like we said, you know, school-wise, you know, Gabe's watching.
Well, and it makes sense too, because if you're going to have this ID program, what do you want to do? You want to get wrestlers who are East Coast on the West Coast, people from the Midwest down South, you know, you want to cross over these wrestlers to other areas in the country so that fans start recognizing WWID, this person's name, putting it together. And now they start getting that following online. It's like an organic build that they're doing through a major company. It's freaking insane. It makes so much sense.
Yeah, you know, it's basically that they took like the gut check and what UFC does with the fighter. and they've turned it up a little bit. They got actually ICE's Wrestling Oasis. So the FSW guys are wrestling at Reality of Wrestling. Yeah.
Those two security guards I saw on SmackDown the other night?
Yes. Yes. They did such a good security job work breaking up things that they said, you know what? We're going to put you in the program. And they showing up. So, yeah, because Gabe was confused. He hit me up about it. And I'm like, dude, he's not wrestling ICE at our show, Oasis. We got him wrestling somebody else. And then I got Cartwheel and Bodie. And then the next show, because he hit me up, because Oasis had hit me up because they were trying to do something the 25th, which right now is going to be tight because if we're doing Mathers and Holloway, which is set, right. I don't think that, you know, unless Oasis is having a match against somebody else. And it was the same thing. Jack Cartwheel hit me up. Like, hey, I'm free the 10th, like to do something. And I'm like, yeah, the show's a little lighter. You know, we're building everything for New Year's resolution. But I was like, you know what? I got Bodie here. I got Gregory Sharp here. Like, I may even just throw Gregory Sharp in it for the fun of it, having a really good triple threat match.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think Jack has worked Greg at all, if I'm not mistaken. Like,
so yeah, and the thing in with Jack being on the West Coast and maybe not having as many options, if he's free, he can get to Vegas. He's friends with people here. He'll stay at somebody's house. Because it's weird. I'm not really sure what WWE provides for them other than, you know, their monthly stipend. Because it seemed like when I was talking with Mathers, it was almost like they had to get themselves out of here. Because it was like, hey, what time's the show start? Because I found the flight. And it's like, you found the flight? I thought they would find the flight. So it was
they might have to book the flight. They might get some kind of reimbursement stipend or something.
Yeah,
like that.
You know, I don't want to divulge too much, but you know, it wasn't like, hey, I'm gonna be on Delta first class. It was more like, hey, I found a cheap flight on one of the secondary carriers like Spirit.
Or a UPS flight. I'm going cargo.
You know, it's like, hey, you know, The Rock just got 41 million in stock options. Maybe you can buy this guy's $150 flight. What do you think? I don't know.
I don't know if Rock is smelling what you're cooking there, but
that's why he's the final boss.
Yeah. Cold Day in Hell, we also got Samaya taking on Gypsy Mac, which, again, we've seen a little bit of a buildup between the tension between Samaya and Gypsy. So, you know.
Yeah, they have similar goals. You know, they both want to be the FSW Women's Champion. So, you know, the common bond and teaming together, but they didn't have to like it. But they're professionals. And they're both on radars, you know. Zamaya actually helped get booked for a AAA show, but she was in Chicago the day before that, and she couldn't get to Tijuana for Conan because, you know, I take pride in trying to bring in the best talent that isn't always from FSW. And Zamaya, you know, she's got that Bull Nakano look. She's different. It's kind of like Santana Jackson was different, and Conan hit me up because he knows we helped train him and things like that. So it's like making myself as valuable as possible to Gabe, to Conan, to TNA, to whoever's there when they need something. Yeah, it's easy to try to get the talent because they're all hitting you up, but it's easier to go to the promoter of the talent that you have a good working relationship with. Because he's going to be honest with you. I'm not going to be like, hey, I'm going to give you this girl because she trains with us, even though she's really green and not ready, and then make me look like shit. It's like when you're ready, you'll get that opportunity. And at that point, Zamaya was ready. And, you know, hey, look at Viva. She signed an AEW. We put the rocket behind her where people are like, oh, yeah, but Maz is back and we got Rochelle. And it's like, well, this is the person we're going with right now. Yeah. I'm happy with what she's doing. She's coming to FSW because she wants to be here. She understands the differences in the financials. because I know what she's getting when I help her get booked somewhere else compared to what we do. And again, it's the opportunities that we provide. And even if it's at a school show with 100 or 150 people, they would rather work that. You know, I had my message yesterday, you know. Obviously, a few of our top talents will not be available for us for who knows how long. Right. So it's like I'm always not trying to be like, okay, well, I'll get a guy who's not kind of ready and put him on a casino show and I'm going to save myself money. No, I hit up bad dude Tito and we got him for the Rumble. Tito's always been a guy that I've respected to the nines. Yeah. And this was before him and Che really took off. This was years ago. You know, I remember doing rookie of the year angles with Tito and Che against Hammerstone and Graves. And that was when Hammerstone won rookie of the year. So you know how long ago that was. When right. Matt Hardy and Rebby Hardy were at Mesquite and we're announcing and we're doing the ceremony inside the ballroom at Mesquite. It's great. It's cool. And the winner, and then there's a fight on stage, which leads to a tag match later. And, you know, never did I think, hey, you look at that and look at Che and look at Tito, where they've gone from there, you know. And, you know, Hammerstone was obviously the rookie of the year. He was way ahead of Che at the time, but you saw the potential in Che. And then Che kind of labored between, hey, taking time off, not really dedicating himself to it. And now the last 2-3 years, it's like, I need these guys back. I want them back.
Right.
Because, you know, they're in their prime of their lives. It's like, I see Tito's teaming up with, I believe, Shane Hayes, the TMDK, against the former Darren Young. Darren Young likes those FSW partners. First, it was Karrion Kross on Raw, and now it's Matt Vandegrift on the New Japan Strong, which is great for Matt because he was always on those pre-shows, the Lone Survivor. And, you know, the inside is, okay, well, they finally had him lose, which means the good things instead of bad things. Usually you lose, it's not a good thing. By Matt losing, it's like, okay, now maybe we're ready to put him on the main shows. And now the first show he's available, he's in a really big tag match and hopefully not just the fall guy. You know what I mean? And he may be being, but he's in a situation where he's in a better spot now than he was winning 7 matches in a row on the pre-shows.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, hey, maybe because of what's happening in New Japan, hey, Matt is the Nevada State champion. Who's to say that Tito Escondido isn't a guy that we can have work a program?
Right.
And because we had other plans for Tito. Unfortunately, they fell through due to injury. So, you know, but he is a big, he's bad dude Tito. He's the guy you look at. You know, I put him in and he beat Rhino at the Mecca a few years ago.
Yeah.
Because I remember there was some, it was supposed to be Team Lawler and a couple, and Royce and Jarrell got stuck in Colorado. So,
right.
And again, Royce and Jarrell, you know, Tom Lawler lives here. And it's like, my biggest mistake as a businessman has always been doing things to make the show better, but maybe not definitely not financially better on my end.
Right.
It's like, oh, okay, well, I can't get Lawler and I can't get Tito. Okay, I'll use my students. And then I'll stick that money in my pocket. Instead, it's like, okay, who can I bring in to take that spot?
Right.
And then a lot of times that spot is more money than it was for the guy that couldn't make the show.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, so I guess after 15 years, that's what's helped FSW grow as the company, as the brand and stuff like that. You know, if you look at it as a pure wrestling company, because nobody looks at AEW, you know, just the smart marks and like, yeah, they have all this talent, but how much money are they making? Well, probably not a lot. But right. Tony Khan's a wrestling fan and he's trying to get the best that he can get. And right. we always say, yeah, looking at it from the outside, man, this motherfucker's got way too many guys. Because when you build a homegrown talent like Will Hobbs and Wardlow, and they actually get to a good level, and MJF or Jungle Boy or whatever it is, and then all of a sudden, like, where's Wardlow? Like, you guys pushed this guy as a monster, and now you don't even see him on TV. He probably got when you were using him, he probably made one-fifth of what he's making now, which he got from the second contract, because he's so over that people were digging him. And now it was like, okay, now you put the halt because you're signing WWE guys and you keep signing and you keep signing and you keep signing. Right. And now all of a sudden, Pentagon and Phoenix weren't really getting much. Hey, now they decided to leave. And there's just so many guys. Like, to me, Jay Lethal left before he was in AEW. He's a star, and now he has been brought down to just being a guy who's usually
they whipped out that black machismo for the pay-per-view. So
yeah, and has he been seen since?
Yeah, it is baffling.
You know, Lance Hoyt, it was like bringing in with Jake. All of a sudden, it's like, then you put Brian Cage and you don't use him. Oh, we're punishing him because his wife said, I don't think he's being utilized enough. He's better than that. First off, it's the wife. Secondly, she's correct. What's the issue? Now you put the Ring of Honor TV title on Cage, but now he doesn't wrestle for the TV title. You put him in a tag team with Lance Hoyt, which is fantastic, but why'd you give him a singles title? You're making him a tag wrestler again.
Well, and then they dropped the singles title off of him. So, but now he just won a match that puts him in the casino battle royal or whatever they're having.
You won a match to be in a match with 30 people. Great.
And I think that's the confusion. That the difference between the products, whether it be TNA or WWE and AEW, is that definition of like being able to follow and make sense and not have to have two or three people filling in the pieces and going, oh yeah, but he lost that title. Oh yeah, but now he won this match. That's gonna.
Yeah, I couldn't even. It's like confusing. I don't even know what the ring that MJF means. Like, oh, he defended the ring. Like, I thought it was supposed to get you a title match the year you won it. It's like he's held it for like 3 years. Like, I don't understand. There's so much. It's like, you know, like I always remember WCW and you had the. I always laughed, you know, the Western States Heritage Champion. And the, you know, and it's like they would have like four or five belts. And I'd be like, geez, yeah. AEW's got to have 10 belts. And I couldn't tell you who the champions are.
No.
Like, yeah. I guess the Young Bucks won the IWGP tag titles at the New Japan show. But I don't know. Is Private Party the AEW tag champs now?
Honestly, I'm blanking on it too because
you know, I know Moxley's the main champ, but it's like didn't they merge a couple of the belts and Orange Cassidy and I couldn't even tell you what belts there are anymore because there's just so many. Then you got Ring of Honor. It was like, did Samoa Joe still have a belt? Like, I thought he had a Ring of Honor belt. I don't know.
No, Joe's been on the shelf, I think. So
who's the Ring of Honor?
Jericho. Jericho.
Still? Okay. Yeah. That's right. He wrestled Cardona for that.
Right.
The TV champion was his Commander. Didn't Commander win?
Yeah. Yeah. So Cage gave it up to Commander. Gotcha. And if you ask me about tag titles, I got no idea. I know Athena's still the women's champion and probably will be for the rest of her life. So,
yeah, it's funny. It's like you got no idea on so many things, at least with WWE, you know. And again, I think they're going a little overboard, and now they got to have the women's intercontinental and U.S. champion and a women's champion. And I get it, but the difference, it's like with us. It's like you have to be realistic. When you have 40 guys and 7 girls, you can't have 3 matches of girls and 4 matches of guys. You know, it's the same ratio of what you right. got. And in WWE, nobody growing up in the women's wrestling grew up as a women's tag team.
Right.
You know, but so.
I think I think that that's what they're kind of trying to. And honestly, realistically, with all that talent, not only there, but that is out in the world now with the women's wrestling, I got a feeling we see them launch an all women's show within the next 2 years. And I think that that might be where this is kind of heading, is that they'll have like an hour show, you know, taped before Raw or SmackDown.
Well, I guess there is success with WOW, with women that people don't really know.
Yeah.
Because even their indie names aren't their WOW names.
Right. Yeah.
So if that's successful, why couldn't a show that's headlined? Because WWE has done a brilliant job. Rhea Ripley is a major name. Charlotte Flair is a major name. Bianca Belair, she's a major name. You know, and Becky Lynch is supposedly coming back.
Right.
And you got Bayley, and you got Asuka, and you got Io Sky, and Zoe is kind of dropped down to that second level, but you got Tiffany Stratton. So you've built 6 to 10 top line women wrestlers that's the A team, and now you got people like Zoe Stark and
the whole group,
Rodriguez and Naomi. That's your second. That's your B team.
Yeah.
So there's
Shayna Baszler. I mean,
there's more than enough talent to do that and do a specialized women, because they're on Netflix now.
Right.
It costs them nothing to do a taping match here, match there. No different than AEW doing the Ring of Honor taping before. Or something that they do after, you know, that there's such randomness of doing it. Shit, they could do it in an NXT taping. You know, they could do a special taping and it's NXT and women's wrestling. And there's so much content that WWE now with the Netflix deal, because they have Netflix and fucking Peacock. Like, that ain't going nowhere. Which the Peacock deal gives them the NBC deal, which gets them the Saturday night main events. Right. It's at a whole nother level. The thing is, Peacock and Max, nobody really cares that much. But millions of people got Peacock because of WWE. Because you didn't have to pay $50 for a pay-per-view. You paid $5 a month.
Right. And it's arguable that WWE has saved Peacock being a thing, because
They're still claiming they're losing this money, but they probably got millions of subscribers while nobody, but it is a minor percentage of people are going to get Max because AEW's on it.
Right.
And if you don't have Netflix, you will get Netflix for WWE. I watched Monday Night Raw for the first time in forever, because I don't have USA Network anymore.
Right.
The only reason I watched SmackDown was I'm home Friday night. It's 8 o'clock. I'm not going to watch Blue Bloods. So I'll watch WWE because there's a good chance that either LA Knight or Solo Sikoa is going to be on. And it's my guys. Right. So, of course, I'm going to pay attention to it. But with Monday Night Raw, it's right on Netflix. There's no Monday Night Football. Brilliant. We start the week after.
Right.
That way, now Netflix will release the streaming numbers. And now, all of a sudden, Monday Night Raw had a great week on USA. They had 2 million viewers. Well, when I watched Netflix, because Mikey had it on at the school when I was there, I came home and I watched it there. Now, all of a sudden, they're going to count all of that. And there's going to be, like the NFL, we had 30 million people watching yep. Monday Night Raw. It was the biggest audience in the history of wrestling.
Yeah.
Because when I watch it, I could watch for 20 minutes on Tuesday. I could be like, right. Oh, I heard Punk. Oh, now there was the after show. And CM Punk dedicated it to fucking Chris Bay.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. Everybody who didn't watch it, like, again, it was an infomercial. We're like, I was joking. It was like, so, you know, it was 30 minutes before they went to the first match. Then they did the match and went 30 minutes.
Right. And it was four pay-per-view built matches, right? Because those matches essentially would have been part of a 6-match or 7-match pay-per-view because these were all storylines that were built. So basically, it was an infomercial around 4 of your top storyline matches. Brilliant.
Yeah, you know, and now the thing is, they gave it away, you know, talking back in the day, WCW giving away Goldberg and Hogan and all the stuff that they could have made money from, which is 1,000% correct. Are we really going back to Drew McIntyre and Jey Uso? Are we really going back to Seth Rollins and CM Punk? But again, the question becomes that pay-per-view format is kind of obsolete.
Right.
So you're not leaving money on the table because they're already being paid as if it was a pay-per-view by the deal that they're getting.
Right. And they don't have the next PLE is the Rumble, which is like February 2nd or whatever that first Saturday in February is.
Yeah, February 1st.
First. Yeah. So before that, though, the week before, they have that Saturday night's main event in Texas.
And they're getting paid on all of it instead of having to worry about pay-per-view numbers.
And now you can plug in these matches that you've been building here and there to, okay, well, we'll put this one on X and this one on Y. And that's the difference now. Instead of that old formula, they really are starting to kind of figure out, hey, because you're not, like you said, with that guaranteed pay, they're not giving it away because you have to subscribe to Netflix, you have to subscribe to Peacock, and you're getting the NBC money for the main event. So all right. This stuff, it's mind blowing. It's unbelievable. The Rock was on fucking NXT.
Yeah, I saw, just to get a little bit of a bump. So yeah. So with us, this is what we're doing. So we run Future Shock, okay? Future Shock is mainly the students sprinkled in with a couple of main guys to help the younger students. And we charge, the new format is it's $20 tickets instead of $20 and $15. $20 tickets, sit wherever you want. But we're trying to talk with somebody who is willing to pay X amount of dollars for us to do a show there. Well, I look at it this way. So you're going to pay me X amount of dollars, which is more money than I would have made probably running the show.
Right.
Why would I run a regular show when I can run Future Shock? Because you want it at your place and you want people there.
Right.
Well, you're going to run a show. So we run the show there. You pay me. but I run the show because it's going to be free over there. So if it's Future Shock and it features Colin and the Mariachis and Jonathan, who's already sold 20 tickets for his debut. Now, he sold, they get $5 off. So they sold, he sold me 20 tickets for $15. Okay. Well, what if we're doing it at this venue over there and you don't have to pay anything? How many of your friends are going to be there? So now the venue, instead of trying to sell tickets there to get 40, 50, 60 people for a Future Shock, it works better for Future Shock because right. I have to now not have to pay the top tier talent of Danny Limelight to go play, go over this place and hope we can cover everything. This one, you just want bodies. So you don't care if they're wrestling fans or just coming to the show. You want people in your venue. Now, if we could do 80 to 100 of people paying $15, $20 a piece, how many we can do if, Matt, you're wrestling for free? You're wrestling and the tickets are free to come see you tonight.
Right.
Your family and your friends are not going to support you. So you're not going to buy a soda. You're not going to buy a sandwich. Right. You're not going to buy a T-shirt maybe. No, you're going to look in the venue that's got a bunch of different things. And now all of a sudden you're going to have a couple hundred people there.
Right.
To where the price you're paying me is way better than any thought process you had in the past, because we're making our money.
Right.
And now we can offer a better way of doing it. Now, if I have to take your venue and I got to pay for your venue and I got to charge people to get in, I can't run a free show.
Right.
So, right. you know, and hopefully.
And your trade-off is making also some of those new people who get in for free want to pay to see the next time so-and-so wrestles or goes, hey, this is a product that I never knew existed. This is great. And now I'm hooked as a fan for X. So the trade-off is you're also building new fans.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's crazy, but you know, WWE, as I said, you know, they're doing all the right pitches and hey, Paul Heyman, yeah, you know, Roman Reigns should get an Emmy now. And it's like, well, why is it different being on USA than being on Netflix? If you're eligible for an Emmy, it shouldn't matter where you're at. But, you know, maybe Netflix pushes harder for it. I don't know.
No. I think that based on what the way cable is set up is that WWE was considered sports. On Netflix, they're considered an entertainment program. So I believe that that's the difference in the Emmy, like the categorying system.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is, I think the funniest part was, you know, Hogan being booed out of the building. And it's funny. There's so much conflicting stories. Right. It's the Trump stuff or it's the racist stuff from before. Right. And it's like, well, for the Trump stuff, Undertaker was very pro Trump. He's the Undertaker.
Right.
Yeah. I really believe in this day and age, it still was the racist stuff over the Trump stuff, even though LA and California is big on and not a Trump fan.
Yeah.
But they're the wrestling fans who, you know, they love UFC. Dana White's not getting booed out of a building in LA. No. And he's like Trump's right-hand guy next to Musk, you know. Right. So I think it has more to do with the other stuff. You know, before the booing, and I looked at Hogan, it was like, man, he was walking like Kurt Angle. Like man.
Yeah,
like,
his hips are not good. Yeah, his hips are not good. And
but what my theory was they weren't booing Hogan, they were booing Jimmy Hart, I think.
Right.
Listen, well, brother, you know, I can't bring you out with me anymore, Jimmy. They booed you out of the building.
Well, and the funny things were seeing the posts of poor Jimmy Hart having to
poor Jimmy Hart. He only made probably 10,000 to just walk out there, wave a flag, and go back and eat and catering for the rest of the show.
And it's like, you know, you do realize, people, that in 1992, Jimmy Hart tied himself to Hogan and has not left, because that has been his gravy boat.
Yeah.
30 years.
He's not Brutus. He's not Beefcake, who walked away. Acting like he did all the work.
Right. And it's funny, too, because when Hogan's music hit, the pop was real.
Yeah. The
pop was huge. And then when he started talking, that's when the booing started. And it's like, that's the best thing about wrestling, is that you still freaking get excited. And then you're like, oh, wait, the guy's a racist. Boo.
Right. But you got to remember, now 20%. Now, the minute you heard the music, immediately the fans know who it is and they cheer.
Right.
And then when it settles in, now the 80% drowns out the 20%.
Right.
So
it's just the best thing about wrestling. It's like, and at that point too, it's like, oh man, I wonder if Hogan's going, boy, if I had one more left, think of how much money I could draw if I go back heel.
You could see after the initial, and then he kind of hesitated, kind of looked around and was like dumbfounded,
right,
for a few seconds. So, yeah, that was definitely, you know, I they were an hour and a half in and they were just getting ready to start the second match. It was like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. And if you look too, it's so funny, everyone complaining about the matches. It's like, well, you do realize that it still is just Raw. And come next week, there's going to be the 6-7 matches, whatever.
Right. They already emphasized that they're going to go back to the episodic type television. It was a special show, and it was what it needed to be. It was like Saturday Night Main Events that you had to establish to the non-wrestling fan, because the wrestling fan, if they're tuned in, they're not going anywhere. The non-wrestling fan is now being educated, and now hopefully you brought some over. And they're watching it with people who may like wrestling or whatever, who can help explain it. But some people are watching it in the dark. Oh, wrestling. Yeah, I hear it's fake. I hear this. I hear that. And they're trying to give you a beginner's course on watching wrestling. Yeah. And, you know, and again, they need to make it like you're watching the Squid Games. Or you're watching a reality show based off the Squid Games. And it's like, you know, it's entertainment value. And, you know, you don't shit on fucking Tom Cruise jumping over the thing on the motorcycle that took him 10 times to do it. You're only going to see the one time.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are like, oh, it's fake. And it's like, yeah, so is every movie you fucking watch, if that's how you want to look at it.
But, you know, and that has always been to me the biggest thing between those people who are into AEW because it's wrestling and this and that. It's not WWE entertainment, blah, blah, blah. And yet you watch and the product has gone away. Even though you maintain the fan base who's adamant, you look at it and you go, really? Because if you watch a lot of this stuff, it's sports entertainment. You know, it's like the matches are great, but you are watching entertainment because that's what this business is. And in the package that they started with Raw, the key thing that was said was television. Television changed wrestling forever because it made it entertainment and not just going down to Comiskey Park in Chicago and getting 30,000 in there to see, you know, Grappler A versus Lou Thesz.
Well, you know, what kills me is, you know, the traditionalists and everything. And it's like, I'm that way when you talk about baseball, football, and changing of the rules. But that's a different dynamic. Like, I hate certain things that they do. Like when the NFL was like, hey, we're going to, like, I think moving the field goal, the extra point. Well, the extra point, the worst kickers never missed an extra point. Like, if you missed two extra points in a year, it was like, man, you fucking suck. Now right. You move it where there's a little pressure to the 17, to the 15-yard line, and I see people missing extra points like fucking crazy. Like, I still remember betting a game years ago. Okay, Morton Anderson was the kicker for the Detroit Lions. And I lost the game by a half a point because Morton Anderson missed the only extra point he missed in his fucking 18-year career. I forgot who they were playing, but they were playing at home, and they were like 6.5-point favorites. And Morton Anderson, and it was like, oh, my God, he missed an extra point. Now, at least at 15, you see people, and they like they shanked it. They lost the fucking game because of it. There's actually pressure on there. There should be always pressure on it, you know, and there's a big difference when there's pressure. When it comes to the wrestling, like I always, my issues with TNA, I always had issues with TNA. So TNA would use all the super indie guys that we would use on a Mecca and would have the Callahans and the Rascals and Chris and whoever it was, Pentagon and Phoenix. And it was like, they never utilized, Pentagon and Phoenix got over, but their matches were never those kind of matches like that they would have in AAA because everything was TV based, 8 minutes. You got to put everything into the package and it's pretty generic stuff. And it was like, we used Pentagon and Phoenix like 6 months later and we were packed and we had meet and greets for Pentagon and Phoenix that sold out. While TNA, who has a much bigger platform than us, other than handing out flyers at Broad fucking Acres swap meet, we just kind of handed flyers out. So it wasn't like heavy. TNA, who has the budget to put a commercial on what you would call it, Univision or whatever it is, barely drew anything. And they had no Latin influence with two of the biggest stars from Mexico in there because they generic, you know, everything's generic. Everything's based on what we need to do for TV. And it's like when we brought him in for the Mecca, it was the same guys, but the matches were 50 times better because they had the freedom to go out and do their thing. And TV wise, if you don't think that a Drew McIntyre can have a five-star match every time he wants to go out there, then you're insane. Right. But for TV, and everything's based pretty much off TV for WWE, even the pay-per-views, they'll give you more time. And I understand, like, if you're that PWG, ROH, that was the preempt of what AEW is. So when you go and watch AEW, you can bitch all you want, as the traditionalists do, but they're giving you that Ring of Honor product that has that niche fan base. And those people are going to watch no matter what. Now, the question is, can you make money on TNT or TBS on those niche fans that, yeah, you got a little peak a little bit because you brought in Christian, you brought in Jericho, you brought in Claudio, you brought in Daniel Bryan, you brought in the Hardys, whatever it is.
Right.
When these guys or the stars, Hulk Hogan, when they all left WWE to go somewhere else, it never moved the needle the way anybody ever expected it to because it was a different fan base. People didn't pay attention to TNA. I'd be like, hey, whatever happened to RVD? Whatever happened to Jeff Hardy? They're in TNA. Oh, what's that? That's the exact quote I got because it's on some small TV. And it's the same thing with our wrestlers and our people. Dude, just because you put a fucking promo on our Facebook or Twitter doesn't mean 80% of our fans watched it. Now, number one, just because you put a promo video up and our fans saw it was up doesn't mean you watched it. But I guarantee you, for every one person that saw it that comes to a show, 5 or 10 have no idea what it is. Somebody hit me up the other day about something. And I'm like, bro, I know it was on Twitter and Facebook, but when you go on Twitter, you could see it had fucking 112 fucking views, which are 90% from people that aren't from fucking Vegas. Right. It's like, it's okay that you do that promo, but I'd rather you do the promo in the fucking building. It's like, so you're going to rely on the promo you put on Twitter. And that's how we know what the story is. Instead of you cutting a similar promo in the building before the match to make it happen.
Well, and in this day and age, it doesn't cost you anything to cut that promo and put it on Twitter and still do the promo in the ring too. You know what I'm saying? Like, cover all bases. Don't just do the lazy thing, you know, get that, you know, and let's face it. You know, the honest answer is we've seen over the years that you allow guys to go in there and cut a promo. And sometimes it is fire and sometimes it shuts the bed. But if you don't do it, if you have a promoter who doesn't allow you the opportunity to do it, then fans don't get invested. But you allow the opportunity for these guys to get the fans into it and invest it. And that really helps. Take advantage, guys.
You know, again, initially, like before Cross ever started, Kevin was the guy who really got it out there of people doing promos to set up stuff that was happening at an event. And now everybody does it, which is good and bad because there's so many to look at. Now you got to pick and choose what you look at. So unless you're a major cog in the show, there's a good chance that yours got bypassed. So the idea is to get your brand value up. And if that includes doing a promo, even if it's short and sweet, you know, kind of like what the stuff we got with Makeshift Chemistry and Sky High right now. And it's like,
yes,
yeah, do your promos. But when we have the show, you're going to open up the show basically calling them out.
Yep.
And they're going to come in and we're going to lead to some things that hopefully lead to a match that people will give a shit about. Because that's what a feud is for the Triple H people who are watching. Oh my God, a feud. And it's like, it's the only business where people don't want you to really know what you're doing. And it's like he said, okay, there's too much out there. It's been exposed for what it is. Let's embrace that and get more people behind it.
Right. Yep.
You know, and it's like, hey, what was the cool thing UFC always did? Oh, look who's in the audience for UFC. Or it's, hey, why will Glenn Lerner sponsor Tough Enough? Amateur MMA, it's easy to anybody can sponsor UFC. It's a big deal, 20,000 people.
Right.
They'll sponsor an MMA, amateur MMA show because it's real. It's the cool thing to do because everybody's doing it. Well, if FSW is presented as the cool thing to do because everybody thinks WWE's cool, hey, we got some WWE guys on our show. Hey, we're doing a Mecca. Hey, we got WrestleMania weekend coming in. How would you like to be a sponsor for X amount of dollars, way less than anything you would do with WWE? But our fans are usually a little supportive toward the local sponsors.
Yeah.
And we're not being like, hey, it's $8,000 to sponsor a show. You're talking $300 to $500 or being on a fucking canvas for $1,000 for a year. That breaks down to $80 a fucking month. $80 a month just on Triller alone, we're going to get 20,000 viewers.
Right.
You know, okay, maybe you're local. Okay, well, your banner's everywhere. You have the thing. You know, whatever it is, at a casino show, 400 or 500 people are going to be there. We're going to reach out. Like, how much do you want for $150?
Right.
You know, I learned, I paid $500 for a commercial, 30 seconds on Monday Night Raw. Well, guess what? I learned later on that nobody gives a shit because most people fast forward through everything and watch it later.
Right.
And now it's useless because not only is nobody watching it on cable, you can stream it. You can watch it later. You could watch your stuff. So you have to create different ways, which is an email fan base. As I said, maybe spending the money for a bigger show, putting it on a billboard that now, instead of being up there for a month and a half at $2,000, I mean, for a month, is $2,500. Now you're paying $500 or $600 for a week, and it airs for 10 seconds every 90 seconds.
Yeah.
So when I get pissed off at the Silverton, I also have to look at, hey, when we're on the marquee and we're getting up there, the problem I have is more, we're only up for 7 days when I sent it to you 27 days beforehand. Right. Well, now we know we're probably doing No Escape March 2nd. It's January 8th. Mikey better get me something in the next week or two. So now there's no excuse for it not to be running every, because they ain't giving us 10 seconds. They're giving us 20 to 30 seconds.
Right.
And it's going to run every 2 or 3 minutes. So if you're driving past, going to the South Point or whatever, every day for work where there's thousands of people who live there, well, it's easy to miss if it's only up for 5 or 6 days.
Yeah.
But if it's up for 28 days and you're driving back and forth twice a day, there's a good chance you're going to see it.
You're going to catch it at least once or twice. Yep.
And then they have it on the side panels. And they have four of those. You know, and it's like there's a lot of value in that because
especially the kids too, right? You know, you're in the car with your kids and they see that on the sign once or twice, they're going to want to go see that. You know,
you see the return of WWE superstar Karrion Kross, or the Hardys will be there. Like when we had the fucking Samstown, the one time they did it, they just charged us for the thing. I think it was like $800. It was up for like 3 weeks. And you had fucking Matt Hardy on the thing. And we had Tyshawn and Remy and a couple of main people. But we had Matt and his wife on there were the mainstays. But we drew really well when we were doing shows because even to this day, it's like you can't, there's a lot of our regulars who don't come as often. Okay, well, we need to find new regulars. And you get the some that do, and they sprinkle in. But what can we do? And that's the number one thing marketing-wise, because everybody wants to rely on, well, it's on Instagram. It's the same people.
Yeah.
You know, 35 to 50 who have 8-year-old kids may not be on there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So... Yeah. What are we going to do? Yeah, that's great. We can have a bunch of flyers and hand it out at WrestleMania, but all our events already happened because it's happening after the fact. Right. You know, one thing I got to say, I'm pretty disappointed. I saw the collective for GCW that obviously we're not on. Hey, we're not going to use your ring. Hey, you know, I was holding off that that's what we're doing, maybe doing a show. And somebody that we've helped and worked with couldn't even, you know, respond to it. Right. So I got sent the, you know, and I saw what's going on with the collective. It's mainly GCW shows. Right. You know, they got a couple. They got Defy and they got DDT. But, like, I don't even, like, see, like, a small company, like, hey, we're going to be using their ring and they're going to get a show out of it. And I get it. The Palms is expensive. But, damn. Like I would have, you know, appreciated, you know, a response back for the help that we've provided over the years. So,
yeah, but the bigger question is, did you know what year that picture was from this week?
Exactly.
Speaking of pictures, another match coming up on the 10th this Friday is Billionaire Boys Club versus Lights Camera Faction. That's a great matchup, man. I think you talk about six guys who just kind of going to leave it on the line.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, they got the youngster, Jaden Monroe, who's looking better and better. And he is now, you know, he's their weak link. So they got to figure out how to protect him in there. He's very good, but he's very good for a young guy. You know, as we've seen, Watson's pretty much, you know, stolen the show in some matches recently. And, you know, Braxton's been injured, but he's a former No Limits champion. Fresco is a former tag champion. Obviously, Class and Reno, you know, they got their eyes on, you know, WWE paying attention. So, you know, it's definitely going to be interesting because, you know, back in the day, they were kind of both on the same sides of the fence. And now all of a sudden putting together stuff and it was like, hey, you know what? Here's a cool match that we haven't done. And that's what we've talked about in the past about getting matches with such, you know, not only is it a strong, you know, I put our roster up with everybody, but trying to make it fresh and trying to give you things, seen that 40 times. You know, like how many times in WWE do you see something and it's over and over and it's like, all right, you know, enough already. You know, we've seen this feud 1,000 times. You know, people want something fresh. You know, this card is solid from beginning to end. You know, makeshift chemistry. There's some top tag teams that are, you know, dying to get a title shot. And team that hasn't been around too much recently, Killer D's, who that was one of our first Future Shock feuds was, you know, Killer D's have a victory over Makeshift Chemistry. So they want to get they want to have that W back. And I don't know, you know, the mindset of Demir and Davion together being that Demir's worked a lot of singles matches and in all honesty, Davion hasn't been around, you know, whatever issues it is. And, you know, he hits me up about stuff and it's like, bro, you're getting an opportunity. Fucking take advantage of it. I don't need another conversation. I ain't fucking lying when I say it. It's like, show up, do your job. Go out and prove to me that you're deserving because I got Sky High who are around and I got Makeshift and I got Golden Era and I got the Faction and I got Billionaire Boys Club and your lucky Koa and Duke. Like, who are you ahead of? What is your resume compared to these guys? I could bring in Tito and Che.
Greatness and Tenacious.
Greatness and Tenacious. Who are you above that you're being slighted? You know, everybody wants to feel slighted. Nobody wants to look in the mirror and take responsibility for their actions. When you can't make 4 out of 6 shows, out of mind, out of sight. So when I'm going to book the next show, you're the last team I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
And younger people don't understand that. Like, hey, I'm available for this show. Okay, great. If I need you, I'll let you fucking know.
Yeah.
But because of circumstances, I needed them. They were available. They're working the show. Now, if they go out there and shit the fucking bed, who knows when they're going to wrestle again?
Yeah.
So it's an audition to go out there and fucking say, hey, you know what? Whatever issues we have, you know, when you put us in there, you know we're going to deliver.
Right.
Well, let me see you deliver. Because I know Faction's going to deliver. I know Billionaire Boys Club are going to deliver. I know Dutra and Wise Guy are going to deliver.
Right.
Makeshift jumped ahead on the Mariachis and you guys because they kept delivering. And Mariachis were another team I didn't mention or ahead of you.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, just because they got to here and they're not here yet doesn't mean the Mariachis aren't progressing. They just haven't progressed as quick as the other guys. But they're still progressing. And they're still a team to reckon with. So,
and then you add those guys like say Bryce Saturn
and Evan Daniels or Damian Desire.
Damian Desire, yeah. That's crazy.
Bryce Saturn has been put in positions because he's delivered. Yeah. I look at him and I'm like, wow, this guy's great.
Yep.
And guess what, guys? It isn't because he does 9 million flips, which is what, you know, the people who don't do flips try to say. Because Jacob Austin Young does so many flips. Because Danny Limelight does so many flips. Because Hammerstone, so all he did was flip.
Listen, there's only one guy we can really associate with that, and that's Jack Cartwheel, because he actually does cartwheels.
That's right.
That's it.
And that's why him and Bodie are wrestling, because that's the match that I expect to see a lot of high flying, high risk. Yes. Those are matches you miss a big move, cost you the fucking whole match.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in no world did you miss a punch and it cost you the match.
Yeah. Well, once again, it's this Saturday, the 10th, 7 p.m. at the FSA.
Friday.
Or Friday. Yeah. New York, trying to get these days in place. But catch it at AFSW Arena or on Triller, hopefully, if the feed goes through. Looking solid. Upcoming shows, January 25th is New Year's Resolution. February 8th will be a Future Shock. February 15th, Valentine's Day Massacre. But really, it's Valentine's Day after Massacre, being that it's the 15th. Yes. Right? March 2nd.
It's all the dejected guys who bought flowers and chocolates. The girl took him and then broke up with him.
So yeah, so it's the Valentine's Day after breakup massacre. Love it.
Right. So yeah, Gypsy Max said, "Bring her all the flowers and candy."
Oh no, Dante, everything's cool. Everything's cool, right?
She'll take free candy though.
Well then, yeah. All right, there we go. Bring Gypsy Mac candy. I don't know why we're promoting that, but there you go. March 2nd, Silverton will be No Escape, Faction Warfare, and then, of course, the Full Tilt 3 Mania Collective in April when WrestleMania is here. So that's what's going on. Joe, any final thoughts?
You know, got a lot, as you see on the plate, that Full Tilt schedule. We're at 11 shows over 4 days. We're still working on something major for our time slot on the Friday. So there's definitely going to be 4 shows on Thursday and Friday. Right now we got 1 on Wednesday, hoping to get a couple more and working on doing something special, with the training camp. So yeah, you know, definitely the first 3 months of the new year are jam-packed.
Yeah. So that's what 2025 is starting off like. And again, just a lot of stuff going on. So keep your eyes and ears peeled. Come down to the arena on Friday and enjoy some of these matches, because again, some really good stuff going on right now that, it's just going to keep getting better as the year progresses. So, start bringing out some friends and spreading the word and see some of these people who, you know, potentially could be future stars, because that ID program is only going to grow quicker. And, get a chance to, like Joe said, see some of these ID'd wrestlers for WWE that you might have not seen yet when they're out here wrestling on the show. So it's exciting.
Yeah, you know, we're looking forward to, you know, something outside the box with Marcus Mathers and Sam Holloway, two ID wrestlers that, you know, as we said, it seems like the 19 or 20 is the cutoff number for right now. They're promoting the shit out of these guys. So, you know, I foresee somebody, at least one, you know, like I said, kind of the tough enough meets the gut check thing. And for this to be a success, somebody's got to come out of that program and get a full-time official contract with WWE. So right now, between Ice, Oasis, Cartwheel, Holloway, and Mathers, we're already at five talents that are in the program. So we already got a quarter of them on FSW shows. So if we can get more, who knows? You can say, hey, I saw them in FSW before they were, again, future stars.
Right. Well, there you go, everyone. This week, thanks for tuning in. You know, your eyes peeled for what's going on. And everyone, happy wrestling to you all. Until next time.